What's good, everybody? This is Ray Daniels, a.k.a. The Culture Referee, and I'm here to talk to you about Two Loss Distribution. They are one of the most technologically advanced distributors in music. They distribute to more stores than any of the distributors around. They distribute, they give you 100% of your royalties. They only charge you $3 a month, and you have an instant option to get an advance from these guys. So if you're watching this and you want to be in the music business and you're trying to figure out how to get help, I'm here to tell you, go to twoloss.com and use the word GODS as your coupon code, and you get the first 3 months free.
What's up, everyone? It's Dream, your K-Verdian queen.
It's your cousin Juju.
And this is Ray Daniels, a.k.a. The Culture Referee, and welcome to the God Show. Let's go. And today we have a very special guest, someone who, when I came into this business, I always looked up to, someone who has created a legend that I don't think she... I want her to be, like, proud of. And so we about to have a conversation with the wonderful, the amazing Shanti Das. Let's go. And before we get started, shout out to our sponsors. Shout out to Yoko Vodka. Shout out to Two Loss Distribution. Shout out to Tote and Carry. And also, lastly, shout out to KL Alkaline Water. Shout out to everybody that watches the show. Keep sharing, subscribe, everything that we need. Now, let's get into this. And if you are a girl, you should definitely watch this. If you have a sister, you should definitely send this to her, because Shanti's a superhero. And I know she doesn't like to talk about it, because in our world, they celebrate superheroes for different reasons. But that's bullshit. We can't allow that. So how you doing, first of all?
I'm great. How are you?
Welcome. We just put the mic a little closer. I just want to make sure.
Check.
And before we get into the silence of shame and everything that you've been doing, we have to talk about one thing. You are the face that every label has been looking for. I'm gonna tell you why.
Why?
Yeah, I'm gonna tell you why. Because you had a nickname. You know what her nickname was?
No.
Okay, so let me tell you what her nickname was in the business. She was known as Shoestring.
Shoestring?
Shoestring, that was her nickname. And I only noticed from being in the business and them saying, we need somebody, like literally, we would be in meetings like, we need people like Shanti, Shoestring, we need Shoestring. And wow. What she was known for Shoestring for, what the name Shoestring represented was, she can stretch a budget, Shoestring budget. So she can pull off shit with little money on a large scale, and that's why they call it Shoestring. Now here we are in the new music business, everybody wants a Shoestring.
Right.
Everybody does. Every label wants one, I know because I'm in them. I know, because when it comes up and you need that...
People really be still saying
that? Listen, when it comes up and you need that young black girl to understand she needs to challenge her mind, or that young boy, black guy, to understand he need to challenge his mind, and the reference that will come up is like, man, you got to be like Shanti Das, Shoestring. Like, she would take this, like, L.A. would give her this one. No, you don't know? You never knew that? No.
I mean,
everybody has been looking for that. So I want to focus on... What was your train of thought? Like how did you, because you also started in the non-modern era. So when you started, you were kind of creating a position.
You were
like the first face of the position. Like we didn't know who marketing people was at labels. So you also was the first face, LA and them push you. But what was it about you that you understood how to make a dollar last? Like, I just really always want to ask you that.
Well, first of all, I think it's important to tell everybody, I actually started in promotions, street promotions.
Oh, wow.
And,
I didn't know that.
I went to Syracuse University, and I started interning at Capitol Records the summer of my sophomore year.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up getting like $500 a week. Like, who? That's like 1991.
That's a lot of money
per week for a college student. And so I did that, and so I wrote like promos for like MC Hammer, BB and CC Winans, all of that stuff. We had Young MC on Capitol at the time. I worked for a guy named Keith Fry, who was VP of Radio Promotions, who actually worked in Atlanta. So... he started consulting for LaFace Records in 1993. That's when I graduated.
Oh, wow.
So I got the opportunity to interview with L.A. 4 months later, L.A. hired me as National Promotions Director. Mm. He didn't
Radio
have
promotion?
Anybody. So it was, so we were, you know, sister, we had a sister company, Arista Records.
Arista Records, yep.
So all of our regional promotions reps went through Arista, but L.A. needed somebody to liaison with them to also talk to all the DJs, meet the music directors and the program directors, and that was me.
Yeah.
And they weren't really doing a lot with hip hop at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, he had obviously signed TLC, Damian Dame, Tony Braxton, all those artists, Usher. But, you know, here comes Outkast. And he really needed somebody to also help in addition to what they were doing at radio with the other artists. So yeah, I started in street promotions.
And you, and you're also very known for Outkast.
A little something, something.
I'm just saying, like, I had Blue on his couch, and Blue would be like, it wouldn't happen without Shanti Shoestring Dawes. I'm trying to, she knew how to take a dollar and make it last.
So I guess to your point, when I got hired as promotions director, because most people go into the game in an administrative role.
Yep.
So as you mentioned, we were creating positions, and I didn't know how to be a national promotions person. I just knew that I wanted to win. Mm. And that I knew I was a young black female. Mm. And then also being short, you know, everybody fucking pat me on the head. Can we curse?
Curse all
the everybody fucking pat me. Oh, little Shanti, little Shoestring. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I gotta, like, you know, make a name for myself. Yeah. I was like, I want y'all to respect me. I don't need to be, you know, nobody's like little sister. I ain't trying to date you. Like, I believe in the product. I want my name to speak for itself. So the first tour I ever did was they put me on the road with Toni Braxton, and she was opening up for Frankie Beverly and Maze. So I set up all the meet and greets for them. And then here comes Outkast with the single Players Ball that was on the Christmas album.
Yeah.
So I just started taking all the 12 inches to the clubs and literally writing DJs and, you know, figuring out what we could do. And I mean, I was everywhere.
Yeah.
Anywhere and everywhere. I toured the Southeast with them, in and out of hole in the wall clubs with Outkast and Usher. And you know, I was just about my grind, and I just, as a, again, as a woman, wanted to make a name for myself. And so I got the nickname Shoestring in college from one of my homegirls, and then it grew with me. Like, so any artists, any rappers, whether it was Biggie, because at the time, Biggie was doing a lot of shows with Outkast, and we were on promo tour together, and, you know, until he passed away, he was like, yo, what up, Shoestring? So I gave myself, like, handle so that, you know, I could get the respect. So I could move into the rooms. I could go to the strip clubs to get the records played and then get the, you know, the respect that I felt like I deserved. And I'm not saying, women, you can't embrace your femininity. You can't embrace your sexuality. I'm not saying any of that. But for me, I needed to be, like, one of the guys or everybody's little sister, I felt like, you know, to get the respect that I earned or that I deserved, rather. And I just bust my ass. Yeah. I mean, nobody was going to outwork me in these streets.
Yeah.
We were one of the first labels to have a rap vehicle.
Oh, wow.
I remember literally we just got a rent-a-van, and I was like, Freaknik is here. Like, we need to be taking advantage of this. And we were literally out with a sign that said LaFace Records that we just stuck on a white van. And then, you know, we did so much good, and LA was like, okay, well, you know, what else y'all need for the budget? I was like, I need to wrap a van. I was like, I need a van in these streets. And, you know, Ty A, I hired Ty A.
I didn't even know that. You know, I didn't know none of that.
Ty Boogie. Travis Knuckles worked for me in promotions. A guy named Randall. So, like, those were my guys.
Yeah.
And then I brought DJ Mars in as Usher's first DJ.
He said that on the show.
I told him, I said, you know, if you're going to go on tour with Usher, you got to talk. You can't just play the records. I need you to hype the crowd. And I was the first person to encourage him to start talking on the mic. So it's been a lot of cool moments for me in my career. And I had a great team around me. But I don't know. I was just hungry.
Yeah.
It was a different kind of hunger, though. Like, but I wanted it so bad.
And you also came up in a time where it was considered negative to shine a light on yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And it was almost frowned upon. Like, you couldn't do this back then. They
wouldn't
let you in
the room.
And
there was no social media. We weren't always taking photos. It was just about getting the work done. And, like, L.A. just instilled something in us, you know.
Trust me. That's why I went to work for him.
You know, it was like he taught us about artists having the it factor, and he taught us about black excellence early on. But he didn't take no shit either. Yeah. Like, it was a different, it wasn't like fear of like, oh my God, I'm afraid of what he would do to us or say to us. It was a fear like he just instilled that energy and battery pack.
Down.
We didn't want to let him down, the label down, the artist down, ourselves down. And so we took pride in it. So like I went out with the L on my chest. Like it was my company.
Yeah.
And it paid
so
off.
So how did, I just have to ask you this because I wasn't around. Because I obviously I'm from here. I was on the South Side. We wasn't, her face felt impossible to touch for us. But what was it about you in that moment, like, that made you feel powerful enough to instill your ideas? Because what people don't talk about in our business, that's why I wanted to talk to you, because we came up in this shit.
Yeah.
And what people don't talk about in our business is that when you at that big table, the big table, you know this, you got an A&R job, you know this at the big table, and you talk, oh, my nigga, your whole career is being judged on everything come out your mouth 100%. For that moment. And it takes, like, I remember my first A&R meet with L.A. Never forget, JoJo Brim. They play a song, And you know, when you also when you get in the meetings, you don't know where to sit. Like your first time, you're like, we know where Shanti sits. Because everybody got their table. So you kind of trying to figure out like, where do I sit? Okay, I'm going to sit on this wall with this assistants. Like I'm going to sit here. And then I was sitting behind JoJo and they played a song. And JoJo said, that's the kind of shit we fucking need. And I remember like, oh shit, you could curse in these meetings.
Oh yeah.
It was JoJo. Yeah. And then it was like, oh, he was like, the fuck we talking? That's the fucking shit. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I remember LA played a song in that same meeting. And I whispered, I don't think that's going to work. And I didn't say nothing. And then like 2 months later, it didn't work. And I said, and with the small of me, and I was like, I kind of said it doesn't wasn't going to work. LA was like,
why are you saying that?
No, he's, you know him.
Why the fuck you ain't speak up?
He was like, I was like, I knew that shit was going to win. And this time he heard me. He said, who the fuck said that? Who said that? Who said that it was going to work?
Yep.
I said, me? Why the hell you, hey, he was like, literally, it was like my first month at work. He said, don't ever work for me. And say something afterwards. I don't pay you to talk after. I pay you to talk before.
Yeah.
And I was like, I said something. And he was like, I don't give a fuck. Man, I didn't hear you. Those are the lessons. But those are the permissions that give you.
Yeah. Like we had to speak up in those
meetings. When I see new people around me, I'm like, what you want to do? Ah, nigga, you better motherfucking say it. I can't believe. Because we came in a world where you didn't. I seen a nigga come up off me. Mm. And I'm Motown. When I worked with you at Motown.
Yeah.
I told him about an artist. Mm. And the nigga said it loud at the table. And they was like, oh yeah. And I was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Oh shit, nigga, you got to talk around this motherfucker. And you were, like you said, you short, you a girl, you surrounded by all this bravado, but you still had that like, bitch, I'm from Mays High School. I'm gonna tell y'all. How?
Well, the really crazy, you wanna know how I met LA though? Yeah. I'll tell you this quick story. I'm in college. I'm going to DC to hang out with my homegirl. Remember the Budweiser Superfest?
Yes,
Superfest. So Budweiser Superfest was in DC. I was like, it was like 1992. I'm at the airport, and the airport is mad crowded, and the luggage is coming around. So I couldn't really see because I'm short to get to my luggage. So I see my luggage coming around, and this gentleman is standing there, and I was like, yo, can you get my luggage? And this guy looked at me, or this man looked at me, and so I missed it, so it was coming back around. So it came back. I was like, yo, I need some help. Can you get my luggage? So got my luggage down, and he kind of looked at me, and then he walked on. So I went to the payphone to call my homegirl, tell her I was here. That's how long ago it was.
Yeah.
Then I seen, it was like a scene from a movie, a guy coming around with like all these Belmont, with all these Louis Vuitton bags. I was like, oh shit, I just asked L.A. Reid to get my fucking luggage.
And he got it?
He got it.
That's a real nigga. That's my nigga. I love him.
And so ironically, when I was interning at Capitol, we were downstairs from the Face Records, same building.
Yeah.
Run into him at the elevator. Oh, you the girl that asked me to get so luggage, so it all connects. So we laugh about it to this day. So I was already outspoken when I met him.
Audacious.
So he saw the hunger in me. And the thing about it was, again, we knew we had to speak up. I didn't have anything to lose. And I was the only promotions person that was allowed in the A&R meetings because LA felt like I had a good ear. I was always in the street, so I knew what the DJs were saying. You know what I'm saying? So I just went for it. And I actually, you know, he probably don't like me to tell the story as much, but I brought him Luda. Like, Luda, I used to go up to Hot 97 and sit on Shaka Zulu's show with him and Chris when he was Chris Bridges.
Chris Lovelace.
And I literally negotiated with them. And in all fairness to Shaka, Jeff, and Luda, they had other people interested. I asked them to sign to my production company. They didn't need a production company. Yeah. But they were like, I seen what you did with Outkast, with Goody. We'll sign to your company as long as you have your deal in place with LaFace.
Yeah.
So I seen LA giving deals to all these other guys. So true story, the day I was supposed to sign my paperwork with LaFace, I still have a contract at my house that says Shoestring Entertainment and Ludacris. I took him in there. LA was like, I don't really hear it. I was like, I'm sorry, what? I've been working on this for 6 months. Dude has a crazy buzz. What do you mean you don't hear it? But I feel like everything happens the way it was supposed to. I'm so proud of Shaka, Chris, and Luda. But yeah, that's the truth. I was one of the only people in Atlanta that had an opportunity to sign him.
But
like, I was in the mix, and I thought I wanted my own production situation because I was in the streets. But then I think I was so hurt and let down that I couldn't believe it. I was like, fuck it.
And then he wanted to become a superstar. And then LA is running Def Jam. And so it's like, nah, he would have to give me some points on the back end. I need some.
So, you know,
I need
again,
two or three of those.
It was a letdown for me because I felt like here I am, this woman trying to have this production situation, and I just got shot down. I should have been like, no, fuck that. You need to sign it.
Yeah.
I should have been like I was in working the records. Mm. When it came to my own thing, I started questioning and doubting myself. Yeah. I was like, maybe I don't have the ear that I thought. Maybe let me just stay in my lane, do promotions, do marketing.
Can I tell you something?
Question. Do you think you had the capacity at the time to even, like, even to know all to, if he did sign your production, to get him to where he is?
I mean, look, I can't predict the future. I think I would have had the capacity to promote the hell out of him. Mm. He was Chris. Like, he didn't need some label to just come in and save him. Like, Luda always, I think, had that it factor, right? Mm. So it was just about enhancing what he and his team did. So, yeah, I think I could have done
not,
that.
But not only that, I'm going to answer yes. Can I tell you why? Because back then, she had to do the 0 to 10. Maybe 20 at the max. And because L.A. always taught me that. When I worked for L.A.,
yeah.
He will always use you as an example. He will always say, because I'll always be like, man, Rick. I'm like, man, my records ain't getting put out, blah, 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 blah. I'll go crazy. And he'd be like, what you don't understand is that we don't pick the winners. He said, we don't pick the winners. He said, they do. And then he would break down like all these stories of like, I did this for this person. I think L.A. Reid, and by the way, he's God to me. He's at the top of my list. I think his only mistake, his big mistake, is that he didn't make bosses of the people around him, like Jimmy did, like Clive did to him. Like he could have easily said, Shanti, here's a label for you. Why wouldn't he? Because if they get powerful, if they up, we up.
Right.
And everything is under him anyway. So if Ludacris comes on, but I just think that was the only mistake. Like, that's why I left Epic.
And again, I'm not comparing like to the success of what he had with Def Jam. Obviously, Def Jam was, you know, an institution. Right. And so I'm proud of what happened. But do I think that I could have helped his career? Absolutely.
Oh, no. Not when I say, do you think you could have helped it? Because I think like a lot of people, and this is just for educational purposes, yeah. Right? A lot of people, they'll start a production company, and if they don't know the business or they don't understand like certain aspects of it,
oh, yeah.
Where they'll lose, like, it's not at the fault of the artist.
Oh, yeah.
But it's at, like,
that's the, fair.
So, like, do you think?
But yeah, time, I do because I understood marketing, promotions. Touring. I mean, I did all that. I was on the road. Like, I went from street promotions, handing out records, to then dealing with the regional promotions rep. So I learned the radio game. Like, no, I didn't do the hand-to-hand. You know what it is. However, I knew the power of relationships. So there were times where, you know, between what Arista was doing, I would go behind them and made sure the record got in because of my relationship.
Yep.
You can't put a price on relationships.
Yeah, that's
right?
True.
You can have all the indie money in the world to get records played. But the relationships, to this day, some of the PDs still come up to me and be like, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have played some of those records. Mm. So, like, I was in every market pounding the pavement. I understood the importance of publicity and rehearsals and all that. So, yeah, I would have built my own company into what I thought it could have been in terms of being great, but it wasn't in the card. So I moved over and transitioned and started doing more marketing. So that's when I did marketing for the Outkast albums and marketing for Toni Braxton and marketing for TLC fan mail. And I just continued in that marketing trajectory after they sold the company. But and to your point, you know, there was some level of disappointment because I felt like, you know, I was happy for LA and Kennedy to be able to sell their company. I do think it was sold probably too early because a lot of the albums hadn't really, or artists rather, hadn't reached their potential, and LA has said that as well in the past. So I'm not saying nothing that he hasn't said. So I went to LA and worked with him in Arista, and then walked away like after a year and a half. And that's when I first went through my mental health challenges.
I was in 2000.
That was 28
I was about to tell
years
you
ago,
something.
Or no, 24
and
years
and
ago.
And the reason I want to have this conversation with you is because if you're sitting on the other side, I don't think people understand what it takes to win in this game. You have to sacrifice everything. Relationships.
Family.
Having a family. You have to sacrifice everything. And the fucked up part is that you don't own shit.
Yeah.
And so it's like you owning it. Like, you owning it, but it's not yours.
And you, like, you know, if somebody give you a bonus, like, you sometimes you get bonuses and cash. And then sometimes you get a watch. And like,
oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
And back then you thought, ooh, I got a watch.
Yep.
And then you realize, shit, I can't use a watch for a down payment on a house.
Yeah. And I was about to say, so I feel like, and by the way, I went through this. I know, like, just to get a little deep into it. When Shakira died, I couldn't believe it. Like,
none of us could.
I'm going to be honest with you. I remember saying to myself, man, I know if I get in that position, I'll never be me. And then I got to a place where it happened to me, and I said, I didn't say I wanted to, but I said I understand where Shakir was.
Right.
And we don't talk about that enough. And what we don't do in this business, and by the way, I didn't plan on saying this, but I'm going to say this because it should be said. What we don't do in this business, that the real problem is that the only people that matter is the company and the artists. Even when you look at, like, we're Outkast, Usher, we're all these, like, Usher just did the Super Bowl. On albums that you worked on, KP worked on, he can still go make $150 million a year being Usher.
Mm.
What's left for us?
Word up.
And to be honest, we ain't got no pension plans.
We ain't got no union. I'm so glad you said that.
But that's
right?
why. But to be honest, that's why I want to talk
ever
about
fucking
you.
Says that.
Because in this game, they get it's all about the company and the artists, and if everybody else in between. Figure that shit out.
That
quick.
Is real talk.
So when you're killing yourself, you're killing yourself for them and you.
Yeah.
But yours is temporary. Theirs is permanent. Mm. I mean, Tupac been dead almost over 25 years, and they still making probably $150 million a year from his brand.
Mm.
So you understand what I'm saying? But what if you? What if you was the A&R? Like, what if you was the marketing person? Mm. And marketing people get it way worse than A&Rs. But not only that, but A&Rs is different because A&R gets the credit.
Yeah.
And marketing does all the work.
Yeah.
We don't talk about that in this game. The A&Rs shine. Mm. They the daddies. They was there for the bacon of the baby. But they ain't got to breastfeed like the marketing people do. They ain't got to do that shit. So I understand. And as I'm sitting there listening to you, I'm like, damn, she still speaks from a place of someone who loved this shit and gave it her all. And then you get to that place where you're like, well, damn, what does the game give me?
Right.
And I got there. And my there was, and I'm telling you this because I never talked about this, but my there was 2021 when Warner called me and said, we're not doing your contract again. And I'm like, why? I'm the best guy over here. Mm-hmm. What's the problem? And then it was like, well, it's just not going to happen. And then it was like, it was over. And then it was like, and this will fuck me up. During when I was at Warner, I had my carve outs and I was signing shit. So like I signed this kid named Ivory Scott.
Mm-hmm.
I know Ivory.
You know Ivory, I signed him. Yeah. Day I met him, I gave him 20,000. This is when I knew what the game was. This is after my second stint at Epic, and I left Epic to go to Interscope, and Interscope was just not supportive.
Mm-hmm.
LA loved me. Interscope was like, oh, what's up, Ray? LA was like, come in the room. It was just different.
Mm-hmm.
And I quit, and I'm like, fuck, what am I going to do? I'm like, man, I got to own something. So I just start signing people. And when I left Warner in 2021, my contract ended, nigga, I was watching the NBA game this weekend, and I heard a Rembo song, and I'm like, fuck. I'm still making the money.
Mm.
And then I hit me like, and I don't get none of that, but dumbass, this is me talking to me, but dumbass, you make six figures from all your publishing and your stupid ass still chasing for a job when you know how to, it's not as sexy and you don't get treated as nice, but nigga, I make six figures. I make almost 200,000 a year from publishing on shit that I did on my own that has nothing to do with these labels.
Yeah.
Then you start realizing what the fuck. So I know you got there because you made it way higher on a label food chain than I did.
Well, let me just say this. So I am not bitter.
Right.
I don't feel like the industry, quote unquote, screwed me. Like they owe me reparations and shit. I understand what it is. I understand the game. Nobody forced me to have the opportunity. Like it was an opportunity of a lifetime, especially working at LaFace. It was like the glory days of the music industry. I made those decisions. I'm a grown-ass woman. I chose to work 22-hour days sometimes, go from the office to a dinner meeting to a showcase, back to the fucking studio, back to the office to get the 12-inch records, in the clubs till 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, and I have to get up at 6 o'clock and do it all over again. I chose to do that. I know how much people want those opportunities, how many people tried to get in and couldn't get in. So I just wanted to put all that out there. I'm not bitter.
Of course not.
However, if I had to say something to a younger Shanti, I would have at least tried to pour into myself more. It just wasn't in the culture. Right, we didn't talk about wellness.
It wasn't what you're supposed to do.
We didn't talk about self-care. So the first time, 24 years ago, no, 20, maybe 23 years ago, I was at Arista. L.A. had gotten hired. He replaced Clive Davis. And so he had a boss. So I didn't want to run to him every 5 minutes. I'm like, let me try to figure this out. Mm. But then I had a different direct report. I won't say the name. But it was a toxic environment. I felt like he was very condescending. I was getting yelled at all the time. And I just wasn't happy. I was like, I bust my ass and I helped build one of the biggest black labels in the business.
Time.
Why of all am time. I feeling like this? Why am I still senior director? Why am I not vice president? Why am I having to prove myself to these motherfuckers at Arista? Excuse my language. I made some great friends there. But why am I having to prove myself to y'all for my VP slot?
Yeah.
I just didn't get it. Now, if it was something I wasn't doing, then okay, talk to me like that and teach me what I need to do. But I felt like I earned those VP stripes.
You did.
After 8.5 years at LaFace. So anyway, I'm at the airport, headed from LaGuardia to Miami to cover a Babyface shoot because Babyface was signed as an artist to Arista at the time. And I had a meltdown.
Mm.
I called my sister. May she rest in peace. She's dead now. But my sister was my confidant and best friend. And I just cried like a baby. I was like, I'm tired. I can't do this no more.
Yeah.
Right. I was like, what am I doing? And she was like, just go home and, you know, think about it, and you don't have to stay there. And then my boyfriend at the time, that later that night, I said, you know, I can't do this anymore. I said, maybe I should just kill myself.
Mm.
That was in 2001 or 2002. And my sister was like, well, what you not gonna do? And what y'all don't know is my dad died by suicide when I was 7 months old. Yeah. So there's a lot of unresolved trauma in my life and family. Sure. I never dealt with it. So here it all comes to a head now. She said, well, first thing you're going to do is you're going to go to accounts. You need to see somebody. You need to talk about that. So I literally called L.A. that night and left a voicemail message. And I was like, L.A., I'm sorry. I can't do this anymore. Because I knew had I met him in person,
he would have talked you out of it.
He'd have talked me out of it. Because L.A. was almost like a uncle or, father, you know, figure, a father figure to me. And I looked up to him. I didn't want to let him down.
Of course.
But I was letting myself down. Mm. So I quit and came back home and slept on my friend Charlotte's couch the whole summer. And then JD,
Charlotte, is that she's from LaFace, right?
Yeah, because I sold my crib, so I didn't have a house down here. So I came back from New York that summer and spent the night on her couch. I mean, slept on her couch for like almost 3 months. And then JD hit me, and he was like, "What are you doing?"
Mm.
He was like, "You've given too much to this business. Like, come on, you can't just walk away."
So fire.
And so Jermaine was, you know, had his deal through So Def through Columbia Records. And he was like, come on, let me just, you know, let me get you an interview. I'm not handing you, it ain't a handout. Just see what you think. So he got me an interview with Donny Einer. Shout out to Donny Einer. Donny hired me on the spot. Vice president, doubled my salary. This man is a stranger.
No, I just got clever because I know how that feels.
I became vice president. 6 months later, they gave me the department. So everybody in urban marketing began reporting to me.
Is this when this around the time KP took over, or this is before KP?
This was before KP got there. And then he came in shortly thereafter. And then I became senior vice president of urban marketing. And then Epic and Columbia merged, and they created Sony Urban Music. A lot of people don't know this. Before they got a president, before Lisa Ellis came in, I was Donnie's right hand. Mm. I helped him create Sony Urban Music.
Mm.
And then a couple years later, I got to do the marketing. I did the marketing for Prince on the Musicology album, which was fantastic.
Congratulations, that's amazing.
I helped launch the careers of Life Jennings. I launched Vivian Green. I did some good stuff at Columbia. And then I ended up going over to Motown as executive vice president under Sylvia Rohn and did that for 4 years. And
that was that's when I worked there with you. It was from I think I got hired in 08, 09, and then I left 2010.
Yeah, I left in 2010 also. Yeah. And that is when it all came to a head again. And just emotional issues. My mom was developing Alzheimer's. Yeah. I was riding uptown in a taxi one day. My whole right side went numb.
Mm.
It was fucking scary. And my doctors were like, you have what's called cervical spinal stenosis, where like the fluid wasn't getting into my spine properly. Mm. But it was all a direct result of stress.
Right.
And I was like, I've been going like this for 20, 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I quit. I left a $500,000 a year check. Corner office.
Executive vice president title. It was right next to Sylvia.
And I was like Sylvia's right hand
as
well.
Yeah, you was right next, yeah.
Right. I was everywhere with her. And it was a wonderful opportunity. I had launched R&B Live in New York with two of my friends. Hottest Showcase in New York City.
You did have the
R&B Live. Hottest Showcase.
We did that.
Everybody wanted to do it. I mean, everybody. Janelle Monáe before Janelle was there. J&B used to come. Denzel Washington. Like, everybody used to come to that spot. Spotlight Live.
The night we performed there was the night that Ryan Leslie performed.
Yeah.
We did. We came on right before him.
That was my show.
I remember
that. And then launched ATL Live when I came back for 10 years. So I've had a great run in this business, but I had to step away for Shanti.
Your own personal.
And then in 2015, you know, I lost my best friend in 2014. I talked to her 12 hours before she shot herself in the head.
Oh, wow.
And that sent me, one of my best friends from middle school, and it sent me in a downward spiral. Then I started questioning, oh, you walked away from your big career. Was this the right thing to do? And I started doing so much community stuff. Even when I left, right when I left, God started moving me to do more community service work. And I started doing all this stuff in Atlanta. I just didn't understand what God was doing in me.
Right.
So I came close to taking my own life in 2015.
How was your, and I only have to ask you that because to me, this is the part of the game that I hate the most. How did your peers treat you when you left Motown? Did they treat you like, would they give you love? Or there was kind of like, oh, she ain't
people
one of us.
People other labels? Or
just people, like just your friends in general.
So I will say the people who I thought were my friends, for the most part, were very, you know, supportive. But there were some, I won't say no names, that I was really disappointed.
Yeah.
And one person told me, they were like, you know what? Just look at it like this. You know, you left the labels and... You know, you don't have value anymore in their eyes.
Yeah.
And I was like, he was like, it ain't personal. And I was like, you know what? You're right. But I didn't expect him to be that one who would stop answering my calls. And so, you know, I had a little bit of that, but my suicidal ideation wasn't because of that. It was just a culmination of my father, my best friend. You know, my money got funny. You know,
trust me, I know. When I left,
you making all that money, your nest egg goes away after 3 or 4 years. I started doing some marketing. Like, I started working with Johnny Gill on the side, Kelly Price, back on Vivian Green, a lot of adult R&Bs. Yeah. Again, the ATL Live thing. Yeah. So I figured out ways, you know, to keep myself popping, if you will. But it still wasn't enough. I wasn't focusing on my mental health.
Right,
I wasn't
right.
in therapy. I wasn't working out. I was overeating out of depression.
Right.
It was just a lot going on. And I didn't want to die. I just wanted to figure it out. Yeah, I wanted the pain to go away.
The winner in you wanted to know, my guesstimation of what it was, the winner in you wanted to know what was next.
What was your path.
And then I was like hurt, like, because I felt like my legacy from years before would go away.
Yes.
All my peers would think, oh, she gave up. She's thinking about killing herself. Yeah. And so I remember walking into rooms. I remember, I think it was 2019, right before the pandemic, and I went to the Rock Nation brunch. Shout out to John Platt.
Is that when you ran into Beyonce?
Mm-hmm. Yes. John Platt has always been there for me.
Shout out to Big John.
He has poured into my nonprofit. I love him. I'm so proud of him. He got me in the Rock Nation brunch, and I remember going in, and I felt like I was in, like, just a weird, like,
what are people thinking?
Like in the sunken place. Like I felt like everybody looking at me like, you know, who, you know, and it was just my own insecurities.
Yes.
And I was like, do I deserve to be in this room? And I remember walking, I hadn't seen B in years, and she showed me so much love.
I
almost broke down crying because I was like, ooh, I'm gonna get emotional.
It's okay.
This has been such a journey for me.
Trust me. By the way, I'm on it now with you. That's why I want to talk to you. So it's okay.
And so, like, even when I found out at the last minute, I was like, shit, I can't fucking run out to Neiman's and buy the hot dress. And I'm trying to fucking pay my rent.
Yes. Right.
You know what I mean? I'm trying to run a nonprofit and save lives. You know, I'm just doing shit differently. I can't turn up and be as fly as everybody is on the gram. But then God was like, you're still Shanti Dawes. Like, show up.
Yes.
Just be present and show up. Like, you've put the work in. Nobody owes you anything, and you don't owe anybody else anything. You did the work. Your name, what you did, should hold its own. And now you're doing something for me. And I say that meaning God, like, has me doing God's work in mental health now. And so be proud of that.
Yeah.
So that was like a turning point for me walking into that room. And now I'm fine. Like, I don't, you know, question myself or what I did. But it was tough in those first few years of being back around my peers because I didn't know how everybody would respond outside of the people who I knew had my back and that loved me. But now I can walk into rooms and the love is there. And I'm so grateful, you know, all the artists, all the labels, all the producers, people that just show me love for the work that I'm doing now.
Was it cold turkey when you, like, decided to leave?
I walked away.
So you didn't take a time to just say, okay, maybe.
And Sylvia was like, do you want to just take a few months off, figure it out? I was like, no, it's time to go. And it was my sister who was like, you've done well in this business. It's time to do something
different.
Did you
have regrets at that point?
Well, I mean, I'm human. You know, of course I questioned it a little bit, but I was so dead set on going home and just figuring out life for myself. And I knew this wellness journey would take a long time. I knew it wouldn't be overnight, which is why 5 years later, I almost took my own life. But it was me figuring things out one day at a time.
No, well, the reason I asked is because I was
and I'm 14 years in from when I walked away.
Gotcha. Now, so, I asked because I was actually speaking to one of my friends. She's an executive over at Netflix, right? Mm-hmm. And she said some real profound shit to me. And it was like, I had to take a second to process it. She was like, we as black executives, we get a position and we don't take time to actually enjoy the work we've done to get there.
Oh, yeah.
And we're always looking for the next moment. And the reason I asked, did you have any regrets or what made you do a cold turkey is because when Sylvia offered you that time frame to say, okay, maybe you should take a couple months to just process it. Do you think you ever took a chance to process the fact that you climbed the ladder that high?
Oh, no, I don't think I did. But I think mentally I was in such a tough place that I couldn't do that. I wasn't well within my own thoughts. But
not only that, her job is the poor. A&R, marketing, our job is the poor. For the company and the artist.
And the cup was empty.
And I don't got no more.
I ain't have nothing else.
Like, I'm going to be honest with you. I know her feeling. Like, when it's like, and not only that, when you've been told one thing and you honor that, like, okay, this is how it goes. And then you realize there's nothing at the end of that. Then it becomes really, because only thing I was thinking about when you was talking, I was like, fuck. If she knew what she knew now, think about how different her life would have been.
Oh, yeah. And I don't know what the trajectory would have been, to your point, Ray. And I'm like, anybody that's listening that has a high power job, I'm not telling you quit your job. You know, if you're going through challenges. I'm saying, though, is look out for yourself. Just like you got to take all those meetings and take all those tours, you know, have a life coach, have a therapist, work out.
Yes.
Take those vacations when you actually have vacation time, so you're not rolling over 4 years of vacation time. Like, you got to create some sort of work-life rhythm. I don't believe in work-life balance. I call it work-life rhythm, because you're always like bobbing and weaving.
And then sometimes the music goes up, sometimes it slows down. So you got to just find your rhythm.
We know things aren't going to be 100% all the time, but you got to figure out, you know, what you can do to pour back into yourself. So had I truly gone to therapy, like my sister told me, and maybe dealt with my dad's death and really figured out what was going on with me, like, as black folks, we have a lot of unresolved trauma that we carry on from our families, from generation to generation. And it's going to, at some point, bleed into our personal lives, right? Yes. Our work lives and everything else. And so I would just say, and I think, you know, the world is in a different place after the pandemic. People are more open to talking more about patient, mental health. They understand when they're feeling anxious. They know what they can breathe and meditation. Nobody was talking about that shit when we were in the game.
No. I just got to ask you a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
And by the way, if you ain't thought about it, we should think about it. I would love to. Why don't you have a Silence of Shame podcast?
I do.
We need that.
So the funny thing is, I had a Silence of Shame podcast in 2017 before people were. Of course. We probably have 70 episodes. It's just below the radar. I just, you know, time is money. We are a small nonprofit. We're still raising money. I don't have the money to put it out there like that. But it's up, and I just we just relaunched it. I'm not the host anymore.
Got you. Okay, I was about to say, because I'm like,
but it's out there.
These conversations need to happen.
Check us out. We're on every platform.
I was about to say, you know, Aaron, we could put it together for you. We would, for sure.
It's there, though. We just need to amplify it.
No, but all I'm telling you is that
2017 we started, that's 7 crazy. Years ago.
But what I'm telling you is that I'm listening to you, and I'm like, the world is, and that's another part. It's almost like life is not about, because we just finished doing an interview with somebody before you came in here. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I was thinking, I was like, life is not about if you're good or not. Life is not about how good you are. It's not about how great you are. It's not about none of that. What life is about is your greatness appreciated in today's time? Like, and to me, I feel like today's time needs Silence the Shame more than ever. Because it's like now in this world we live in, everybody lives in their own little pockets, and we kind of come to your pocket. And I'm like, damn, I need that. So I want to just tell you something that I had to learn, because obviously I came in the game in a time where I saw what you went through. So you never think it's going to be your turn. And I, you know, and to me, it wasn't me. What changed it for me was I wrote a letter, Dear White Executives. Then it was like, I was trying to enlighten white people on what it's like to be black.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, but I became the enemy.
Yeah.
So they was basically like, well, we don't, they didn't tell me that. Everybody knew that they didn't want me there no more, but they couldn't get rid of me because the letter was out, and they also couldn't let me go shop myself. Because if I shop myself, then people are going to be like, are they letting you go because of the letter? So I had to, they had to wait till my contract was 3 days removed to say, oh, another one ain't coming. The whole time I was working thinking the contract was coming.
Wow.
I drove home every day. I'm not going to lie. I drove home every day and I cried. I didn't cry in the mornings. I didn't cry at work. But I cried every night on the way home because I couldn't believe that this was my life. And I'm not going to lie. During this whole time, I thought about you, Shakir. KP is so fucking great. And he's still.
Yeah.
KP should be CEO of Warner. And you and him should be Craig and Julie. Not seriously. But then you start realizing, oh, they're not going to give that to us. They saving the next Craig and Julie for the next junior Craig and Julie that looks like them. By the way, that's not, I'm not mad at that.
Yeah.
I want to have my black-owned company to black people too. But what I am saying is that we just got to this point where, I was crying every day, Shanti, every day. And I'm like, fuck, what am I going to do? And I obviously, by the time I got home, I didn't want my kids to see me crying with my family because I wanted them to feel comfortable.
Right.
Because like you said, I got my nest egg for some shit like this happened, but I had to stop going to dinners. And then I remember thinking like, I'm too fucking good to go ask somebody to let me do what I do. I'm too good at it. I was like, you know what? Put the camera on me. Ask me a question. I'm going to put that out there. Because the one thing I did know, the one thing that I knew that you'll appreciate, and you don't have to say this, I'll say this on record. Working with L.A. Reid is, as your first situation, is the most fucked up thing that can happen to you long term. You want to know why? Because the nigga is really great.
Oh yeah,
the nigga is great. He's going to teach you. You literally going to learn everything, and then you think to yourself, "This is what everybody's like." So I would get mad when I was at other companies
because
like
your standard was here.
Yeah, so my standard is here. So I would get mad at other companies, and I would be like, "And I used to walk out, Shanti. I swear to God, I used to walk out being like, I know they talking about it upstairs right now while I'm down here. They don't want me to hear it." And then it hit me. They don't fucking know. They didn't have to know. They was just in the right place at the right time with the right people, and that's why they have the power. So you got niggas at these companies who are stars reporting to a white person that no one knows, that gets to make triple what you make, live a way better life than you, and no one ever knew them. And then you start realizing, this is not going to be mine. So what I'm going to tell you, Shanti, what happened with me was, I said, put the camera on, and I'm being honest with you. God's plan was God's show. That's really what happened. It was like, I'm not going to ask somebody to hire me. Plus, I'm okay. I paid my house off. I got a couple of my cars all paid off, but I had other bills that I had to deal with. So I'm like, shit, this $30,000-$40,000 a month kicking my ass, and you know I'm diving in shit. And then at the same time, I'm like starting this, and they're like, we need $20,000 for a set. And I'm like, $20,000, nigga, I ain't made a dollar from this shit yet. Then I'm paying my co-host and I'm paying everybody, and I'm saying all that to say, I still hate it when people treated me like I wasn't in the music industry. I hated walking in rooms with my peers and they want to talk about the podcast. Fuck y'all. Why y'all want to talk? If I'm so fucking good, why y'all not bringing me in here then? That's how I thought. I didn't understand God's plan. I go to LA, I go to Paris to go, me and her go to Paris to go hang out with LA and Usher. And all I'm thinking to myself the whole time is my birthday. This last year, I'm like, man, you know what? Man, I'm just going to act like, I'm just going to be a music exec because I'm with LA. And all LA wanted to do was argue with me about the show.
Really?
What? Nigga, am I lying, babe? He's like, nigga, did you say Michael Jackson is, did you really say, right? And I'm like, and by the way, it's like the private room, like Dwayne Wade and Gabby Union's right there. I'm like, kind of like, I just want to be in the room and feel like what it's like to be who I used to be. And now all he wants to do is talk about the pod.
That's funny.
Came back to Atlanta, and I'm telling you this, it's a story, but it's important because it's how I dealt with it. And I know where you are. I came back from Paris and I was like, you know what?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
God, I hear you loud and clear. I'm no longer a music exec. I'm out the music business. I'm a media exec. And then all of a sudden, everything I wanted started coming my way. Then all of a sudden, here come this deal, here come that deal. And I'm like, fuck, that was all he was waiting for. For me to choose my purgatory. For me to choose my side.
Listen. That's how I feel now. I like, know. I was in hell going into those rooms. Same thing. I felt like an outsider, yes. right? Looking in. And I'm not in the mirror. Like, people hit me, oh, can you help me with this? Can I send you some music on IG? I'm like, I'm not in the music, record industry yeah. anymore. I am Shanti Das, the CEO and founder of a mental health nonprofit.
It's called Silence of Shame.
Called Silence of Shame. Who happened to have had a great career in music.
And you got, and I know where you are because even now, the crazy part is, this year at the Grammys, it was the first time I went to LA and I didn't give a fuck about nobody in the music mm-hmm. industry. I didn't care who had a party. I didn't care who I was invited to. I didn't give a fuck. I was like, mm-hmm. I'm not in the business no more. Let me just enjoy being an outsider.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, and I'm only telling you this to say that what really changed my life, I really believe God is waiting for all of us to, it's almost like there are invisible spaces in life that we got to get to for him to say, all right, cool, you're there, now here. Mm. And for me, it was like I was, by the way, I'm getting my ass kicked. I'm getting my ass kicked, Shanti. I'm paying motherfuckers. They ain't coming on time. They acting like that. And I'm like, bro. And all I'm thinking to myself is, man, I could just go do a surplus, work for a label, make $500,000 a year, and don't have to pay nobody shit. Mm-hmm. But Ray, you ain't going to never get to $100 million that way. Mm-hmm. So, nigga, what do you want? Mm-hmm. You know what? Let me stay on this path that I think I can get to $100 million. Now, here's what it all changed. Something happened when I see a therapist, I see an executive coach, and it was like it clicked finally, and she was, and my biggest problem, all of our biggest problem, I can assume, is that if somebody came in here right now, said something about you, fuck with you, I'm gonna stand up, fuck anybody on this couch, what's up, you fuck with me, I'm like, it's cool, don't worry about it, y'all, he ain't shit, don't worry about it, then I'm like, I gotta stick up for myself that way.
That's right.
And the minute, Shanti, I start sticking up for myself,
that's right.
I felt like nobody in the world can touch me. Because I'm doing God's work. And the one thing he wants me to do was stick up for yourself. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, blessings came running down. Mm-hmm. Blessings that I didn't even know was happening. Mm-hmm. That I was like, fuck, oh, that came, the Jordan Peele deal. That happened. That, all this shit came down. And God was like, I'm just waiting for you to stick up for yourself. Because all you're going to do is give it away like you do every time. Mm-hmm. Somebody going to come give you a sad story. And you're going to be like, I could deal with it here. Yeah. This time I was like, you know what? I'm not even telling nobody I'm up. I'm just gonna be up. Yeah. I'm gonna go just buy a car and let y'all motherfuckers guess. Something must be happening. It is. But it's my business. It's not yours. Right. And the reason why is the working this way is because the one thing I never stopped doing and you never stopped doing was working. So when you start talking about the R&B Live, the ATL Live, as much as people are celebrating that shit was hurting my heart. Because I know that was someone trying to create something to help them feed themselves and needed to find a way to do it where it didn't look like they was begging for tips. Am I tripping? Am I
like, right.
Come on. So
right.
that's what this is to me, the show.
Yeah.
But now I just treat it. I still feel the same way, but it's taking off now. But it's really like, bro, this is my way of not kissing y'all asses no more.
Right. That's
right. Silence of Shame is your way of not kissing nobody ass no more. Cause let me tell y'all something. Everybody has a motherfucking limit.
Word.
Everybody you no think you don't. You I don't give a fuck who you are. You gonna have a moment where you gonna say, "What the fuck, man, nigga? Y'all niggas know I'm from motherfucking Banneker High School." And you realize that don't work. So it's like, you know what? Let me just go back to
that. I got a question though. You think the problem is that we don't know how to process situations?
No,
because like no, because and the reason I asked that is because like even Shanti said like she said it took her a while to even like when she finally went to therapy when you like you even brought it up when you finally went and seen a executive coach like you learn how to process situations. I feel like we don't have even with having a mentor like LA Reid didn't teach you how to process success in this magnitude
because he's still learning.
But hold on, but that gets to a greater point. It's like we're talking about mental health and talking about getting to a breaking point, but you don't even know how to understand how to process the point of getting to that breaking point.
I got it.
You're right though.
Here's the problem. You're right, but it's bullshit. And here's the reason.
It's true.
Hear me out. We have to learn from the outside.
But I think you're still processing it.
No. Like, that's my point. My point is we are processing it. But because, nigga, LA is the greatest to ever do it. And he's still out here trying to prove himself. You think Craig Cameron is trying to prove himself right now? Nigga, do you think Julie Greenwald is trying to prove himself right now?
You think LA Reid still trying to prove himself?
Yes, nigga. Because he's not, because bottom line is this. If Shanti was going through what she was going through, and LA was in the power of the mindset he is now, he would have said, come over here.
But Ray, but
he's not. But he,
I think you just missed the whole point.
Well, let me just say to
I'm
you,
I'm talking about the processing.
Like the from a personal perspective, outside of even the business. Yes, I think you're right. We're not taught to process things, especially even in our community. I, even at the highest level as an executive vice president, didn't know how to process through stuff. It wasn't until I got an executive coach and started paying attention to that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
So or, to that point, I would say yes. You got to have have other people help you through to process. That's why mentorship is important too.
And to be honest with you, that's why I said it's bullshit. Not you're not wrong for what you're saying, but what I'm saying is that what you don't understand is that the other side still controls everything.
Yeah.
You build up the assets for them to own, for you to go outside and figure. I'm saying to you that you're right.
So
but
you say they control everything. I'm talking about from your like I'm personal. Talking about your personal.
I think he's talking about a personal.
I'm talking
perspective.
About from a personal level.
Yeah, like, not the label side.
What I'm saying is like you're talking about the what got you to a breaking point. Fuck the breaking point.
Yeah. Okay.
You have to get to that point first. You have to start the journey to get there.
Yep.
So those that's like family can add to stress, work can add to stress, finance can add to stress. Like all these different things can add to a level of stress. What I'm speaking on is the idea of processing. Now that you have a role, you have a title. Now that you have people that you're there reporting to you. Now that you have more responsibility, more opportunity to do things in a bigger, grander scale, you have to be able to process that stuff and still be able to operate and live a day-to-day life.
And
agree.
And, So yes. And if I could take that a step further, we don't have healthy ways to cope. When we get to that level.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, I don't know if the artists are still doing it, but we went through that period where everybody was on lean or they were popping pills and drinking. Even for me, like sometimes, you know, back in the day, I would go home and I like, you know, I'm a social drinker, but drinking at the crib and you have 2, 3, 4 drinks by yourself, I'm using that as an unhealthy way to cope.
That's
so,
right.
We don't have the right skills to process through it. That's why Silence to Shame does offer wellness trainings to companies and trying to do more in the industry. Like, I want to do mental health boot camp trainings for new artists and new writers and new executives. So you can learn how to process this stuff when you are channeling that stress and learning what to do with it and learning, you know, ways to cope with it. So honestly, every fucking label should be partnering with Silence of Shame.
I was about to say,
single label, we need to do these boot camps and these trainings when the artist gets signed. Don't wait till it becomes a problem.
Right.
I agree. And have you taken it to them?
So, I'm pitching. Yeah, you should. But
you know what it is?
But some people, like I said, John Platt came right on in during the pandemic. He made us a part of his social justice fund. We created what's called the Soundtrack of Mental Health.
So you mean to tell me none of the $100 million funds that they all offered, none of them gave you money?
We got money from Sony Music Publishing. Thank you, Sony. We got a little bit from Capital.
I'm going to tell you something. This is what, why she's saying that?
Like
that,
a little.
Here's the thing. That's the problem. If I was CEO of a label, do you not think I'm like, give Shanti money? I know what she's done. The only person doing it is a black CEO. That's what I mean by it's bullshit. That's why I understand what you're saying now, but I was saying it was bullshit because they learn from the inside. They learn from the fucking heat with the AC or whatever the weather is outside. They can turn the heat on the AC. Nigga, we got to go outside and learn. And not only that, we're learning amongst, we learning outside with people who are like, I knew your ass wasn't going to go. You thought you was with them, did you?
Let's be honest. And this is like, this this is the part that's like, that I don't think that we as black executives even understand what we're doing.
For sure.
We're nothing but the person that's running the field.
Glad you said that.
We're running the field.
But let me ask you a question. You're right. I agree with you, but I got to ask you this. Do you think when Shanti was shoestring at LaFace, she thought like that? No. She thought, I'm fucking giving these people my best because this is my new family. She found out she was running the field when LA sold for $150 million, and she was like, hold on. So what the fuck does that mean for us?
Correct.
That's my point, though. So it's, you don't know you're running the field until you go through a certain point. That's what I'm saying to you.
Yeah. No, I didn't.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You're right, by the way.
But in that same regard, we don't take that, and that's where the processing part comes, right? Because even if you run the field, you're running the field, but you get a very healthy salary. So it's still the level of comfort that you develop that you're like, oh, well, I'm cool right now. But then it's all the other stress that you take on that you don't even process that stuff the same way.
But you know what? So I'm glad you said that. That's why I said I worked at Warner. I know I made them at least $30 million while I was there. I know. I saw the motherfucking articles on Billboard and Hits Daily Double. But, nigga, it was the shit I did on the outside for me that made me my money. Yeah. Nigga, it is the reason why I'm straight. It wasn't because somebody offered me a job. It's because shit that I've been building finally, what they divested fully. And it was like, oh shit, let's get that now. I didn't know, bro. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not, you're right. But what you don't understand is that if there's no Shanti Das, if Shanti Das was president of Warner Records, do you think anybody at that company, at this moment where she is right now, do you think anybody at that company is ashamed of having mental health issues? No. Of course they aren't. I can go talk to her. She understands. That's the problem. The problem is the only person that understands us are black people from where we from, and none of them in fucking power because they're still outside proving themselves, my nigga.
I don't think people are technically ashamed. Ashamed.
No, she says, I'm going to use ashamed because it's silence ashamed.
Yeah, but I feel like now, like, even saying, like, people are ashamed of having a mental, like, no, because now it's like, it's in this, we're in a space now.
You can talk about it.
Where you can talk about it, but you also, like, great example, United Masters, where we have unlimited PTO. Why? Because if you need to go take a mental day, go take your mental day. If you need to go take a week, go take a week.
Let me ask
you
a question. Who is
the CEO?
Stop.
What color is he?
What?
My nigga, you saying what I'm saying?
No.
What I'm saying is that if black people are not in charge, you can't talk to somebody who understands where you're coming from. Nigga, you start internalizing it.
Yeah.
That's where the shame comes from. Not having someone that looks like you, or even they don't look like you, just understands what you're going through, makes it okay. Dog, that letter I wrote on God didn't mean shit to me. It didn't mean shit to me. I live in Atlanta, my nigga. I live in a mansion, and so does my mother. We good down here. That letter was for all the black people in New York and L.A. I just want to show white people, this is what we deal with. We told work twice as hard to get half as much. Like, we know the game. It's always a white person at the top that even the hottest top. That's why Big John cuts her a check. He don't have nobody he got to report to except for board members. I'm cutting Shanti a fucking check. I remember you, Shoestring. That's why it's important. My nigga, who the fuck is around that know us? Who? Who the fuck is around from 2010 when she quit? That's empowered. I could say, Shanti, here go a check. Because I guarantee you, if I was, what you need? Matter of fact, anybody else? I'm calling all of them. Why y'all not? Bro, that comes from power. That comes from Clarence Avant type energy.
Yeah.
We don't have it. And that's why, motherfucker, that's why shit like this is as important as this is. Let me ask you a question. You think if the whole world knew about this, you don't think every label would be giving her $10 million a year?
And I will say, full transparency, some labels have invited me to talk to their staff.
Fuck that talk.
They've hired me.
I need a check.
But I just, I like to be fair.
No, I know, but I'm saying, I want hire this and me.
But yeah, but our organization, we really need the support. We need the support, we're doing the work.
Yeah.
What's good, everybody? This is Ray Daniels, a.k.a. The Culture Referee. And if you were wondering who this beautiful woman sitting next to me is my sister, Tiffany Daniels Sai. Let's give it up for my sister. Everybody can clap. This is good. And my sister she's the most talented person in the family. And we started a family business, a signature scent company. So if you like smoke a lot of weed in your car and you want to get the scent out, you have to check out these scents. I know guys that use it for the weed. I know people that use it for cologne and everywhere they go to get compliments. We make candles. We make
room sprays. We got them in kits. So if you want to buy something for your loved one or anybody, you know, that you care about, hit us up, LorraineCo.com.
And we're going to put the website at the bottom of it. But support this black business, support this black woman, and order, I promise you guys. As a matter of fact, use the word gods, and we'll give you 15% off. I just made that up, so if my sister's face looks crazy, don't get mad at her. I'll eat that. But guys, when I tell you this shit is incredible, you really should check this out.
The best scents ever.
LorraineCo.com. And we'll put it at the bottom of the screen. Thank you.
Thanks.
Shanti, so I'm asking you a question.
Yes.
So.
Y'all funny.
By the way. Welcome to the God Show. We argue.
That's that.
I love it.
Time.
I love it.
Because we are from, because you know, that's my brother. I love Juju, but I do know when he has people in the back of his mind when he talk.
No. And fuck no.
Uh-oh.
No. No, I speak freely.
I'm going to do it off camera.
Okay, what was that question you're going to ask me?
I could get you off. Oh my God, I'm sorry. Okay. No, the question I was going to ask you was that, so when you say the silence of shame, raising up the money,
mm-hmm.
What has been the biggest challenge? How can we help you raise money?
Well, first, thank you for that question. And I do want to thank everybody that has donated and supported. Like I said, we have had some labels that have poured into us. We've gotten some grants from some great companies. The issue with running a nonprofit is, like, we operate, our annual budget is a little bit under $1 million annual budget. That goes into programming, salaries, you know, everything. It's still a business. That's the one thing people don't think, nonprofits are businesses. We are still a business. But there are a lot of larger grants that we can't apply for because our budget isn't over $1 million. So we get caught in a rut.
So if you get over $1 million, you can apply for bigger grants.
Yes.
Mm.
But we need unrestricted funds in order to have, you know, supply.
What does that mean?
That means like operational funding. So you can like have a staff, you know, pay salaries. When you get those grants that are more programmatic for programs that you build out, only a small percent can go to that kind of stuff. So it gets, we need more individual donors.
Mm-hmm.
We need more corporate donors. We had to postpone our gala this year because we just didn't have $60,000 to put on a big gala. But I'm excited. You know, our day is coming up. So back in 2017, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. I just started openly talking about it and getting celebrities to post on that day. And I said, I'm just going to make up some shit. I put my shoestring hat on.
Love it.
Same principles apply. I had to get out there and figure out guerrilla marketing from a social media perspective. We made a little graphic that said National Silence to Shame Day. And I said, I'm going to see if I can get some people to post. This is 2017. We got 90 million impressions in one day.
I remember that.
We had people in South Africa, Japan, London, America.
Hold on, so that wasn't official?
No, that shit was my made up. Shoestring,
let's go.
I fucking made it up. But then the But the National Day Register caught on, and we applied. And so now May 5th is actually it's still Cinco de Mayo, but it is also National Silence to Shame Day. So we have our own day. So we use that as a day to raise funds. I mean, also, I just want people to think out of the box. Like, if I could get Live Nation to say, we're gonna add 10 cents onto two tours that's going out. This is after you get the approved budget to go on. But if you add 10 cents to every ticket or a quarter to every ticket, like, we want artists to think about that, you know, and we'd be happy to use this money for programs for in mental health and, you know, for schools and for artists and musicians. Like, I just want to get creative. You know how there is that Stand Up to Cancer telethon? Like, I want to stand up to mental health. Like, let's do something so why don't we do a song for it? I would love that. Like,
let's drop a song.
We need something to support us where we can get operational dollars. Because I can't right now. I'm grateful that we are at this point. We're 7 years in, but I need to be able to sustain the organization. I want this legacy of Silence and Shame to continue to grow. And sometimes, you know, the same organizations get all the big dollars, you know, and we end up getting,
that's what I mean, like the homies.
It's the same shit, you know, and I'm not always in those rooms. Like, I'll be honest, I'm not in the galas that cost $5,000 a ticket to get into, where I'm hobnobbing and rubbing elbows with some of those folks. That's why, like, I just got back. People are like, damn, you were on tour. I went to Grammy Week. I saw you, Super Bowl and All-Star. I paid for that. The organization didn't pay for that. I'm not out, you know, using nonprofit funds to fucking travel. I'm trying to get in those rooms so I can meet the people, like the guy who runs Fanatics. Like, I'm trying to meet like all Rubin. Of those people. Yeah, like, I need to be in those circles so they see the work that I'm doing and that they know I'm committed. So, in a sense, I'm back to doing street promotions.
You know you should connect with?
But it's for Silence of Shame.
You know you should connect with? I think, I don't know if you've done this already, but what I would do if I was you is I will align myself with about 3 to 5 really powerful artists who are all, like, the first person popping my mind is Meek Mill, right? He's like an artist. He's from Philly. He's close to Michael Rubin. He's kind of like tired of the old black narrative. He's tired of the old black way. And he's like always a guy that speaks above. Like, man, that's bullshit what they said. Like, he said, like, I done been around all these millionaires. The only people that put me in rooms was the white people. Like, shit that he said that it's like, he not wrong, but damn, why is it like that? But someone like a Meek Mill and do a Silence of Shame concert, or an artist that dealt with suicide.
That's what I want, but it's just, you know, listen, I'm grateful to be on this show today. I'm hoping that this sparks something and that, you know, we can continue. I have some good opportunities, I think, that are in the works. But it's a grind, you know. And I feel like I am, though, entering my season. Like, just a year ago in 2022, you know, shout out to D. Nice and Stephen Hill. They had me. I was on Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve. Ryan Seacrest interviewed me in the middle of Times Square. And they gave us a $10,000 check. But I was fucking on New Year's Rockin' Eve for Silence to Shame. Yeah. It had nothing to do with, you know, my career in music. Although the work that led up to it. But again, I feel like we're making strides, and I feel like I'm really close. And I think it takes 10 years to really build a brand. So like I'm in year 8, and so I feel like I'm entering in my season where hopefully the fruits of my labor will pay off for the organization. And but the shit that moves me is like, like, you know, a lot of times I'll go into a room and they'll be like, oh, you the girl that was at the 1995 Source Awards with Outkast, which that was great. But yep. Now I fucking walk into a random Target anywhere and they be like, you the Silence of Shame lady.
Yeah.
Or my nephew is alive because of you. Mm. Or my husband is in therapy because of you. Or we broke the generational curse. And this is a true story. Grammy week.
Yeah.
I'm in line for checking in for the Black Music Collective dinner. This young black girl is taking the names. She goes, what's your first name? She was looking down. I said, Shanti. She said, what's your last name? Das. She looked up. She said, wait a minute. You're Shanti Das? I said, yeah. She said, you just put out a book. I put out a book called Have Yourself a Merry Little Griefmas. It was 20 tips on grief during the holidays. Mm. She said, do you know that your book saved my mother and I just lost my father.
Oh, wow.
She said, your book was the only reason why me and my mom made it through this holiday season. Like, that's the kind of shit that, like, that's why I do what I do.
Yeah.
I ain't looking for no accolades, no awards. I just want to keep doing what I'm doing. I want to grow this organization. I want to have Silence of Shame, you know, recreational centers and urban communities so we can bring in. We don't do direct services, but we partner with clinicians and psychiatrists. I want all the black people to have the resources to process through all of this. Yes. But it does go back to that, to have healthy ways to cope. Suicide rates are up 30% for black youth. 30%.
Yeah, we don't talk about that.
I don't want another black child, the dean of a college, took her own life because she was getting bullied by her white colleagues just a couple months ago.
You hear that more.
I don't want that to happen. That is why I do what I do. I mean, I can talk about raising money and all of that, but we don't talk the talk. We walk the walk.
Right.
I agree.
Our organization exists to create mental health literacy, empower communities, cut down suicide rates, build resiliency. And that is what we're trying to do. And that's there are beautiful. Some other great organizations out there. I feel like we're stronger together. Like, get at me, y'all. Like, we need support. But I would love if my music community, and I know y'all have supported me, but lift me up in a way
We Are
the
up.
World. Lift the mission of exactly. us having healthy black minds.
Right.
Right. And healthy bodies, because mental and physical health go hand in hand. Mm. And I will say this. The last thing is, now I actually have my own personal podcast. It is all done virtually. We don't have a studio or anything, but it's called The Mebo Show. Mm-hmm. So my personal company is Mebo, M-I for mind, B-O for body. I got really sick a couple years ago. I had to have my gallbladder removed. My brother has heart disease, and he's been through a lot. Hypertension, diabetes run in my family. And I was like, really, health is the bag. So that's why I started the show. And so Johnson & Johnson's is my partner. And so they provide medical experts. So like season one, I had a whole season one, but we only have like 3,000 subscribers. I'm trying to grow it. But I dedicated season one to health and hip hop. So I interviewed Eric Sermon about heart health and hip hop, Charlamagne about mental health, David Banner, like Yo-Yo, MC Light, all of these people about health and hip hop. And so season two, we're getting ready to start recording, and I'm opening it up to athletes and celebrities. Again, I feel like, so where Shanti Das, I want to live, is at the intersection of health and culture. Just how, like, you are at the intersection of culture and music and business. Shanti Das lives at the intersection of health and culture so that you don't have another heart attack. Your brother doesn't die of diabetes. You know, your mom can get the help she needs, or your grandma, she has Alzheimer's. Like, I want to have all these conversations in black culture about health and how we better ourselves.
So, I have an idea. Why wouldn't you do this? So when I go to like Publix, Kroger, they always have like, do you want to donate a dollar to this?
Yeah.
So why don't we go to like all the local black owned Atlanta entrepreneur businesses?
It's funny
and say,
you say that. I just reached out to Poncho from Breakfast at Barney's, and I said, on May 5th or the month of May, would you do that? Can we put up a sign so you can give a dollar or $5 back?
Or just round up.
So we need help. You're going to be on our board.
I will.
Our board is, I mean, we have an advisory board that we're trying to build out. So we need help.
I will. But I see things like that. Like,
and that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And we have like the gold star platinum rating. Like, you know, we are very transparent as a young black nonprofit. Because, you know, we want to make sure that we are always compliant. We have a board of directors. So our shit is legit.
I'm going to leverage a favor for Poncho right now. You know, the Usher A-Town girl.
Yeah.
You know, he says Breakfast Barney.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
Teron wrote that. And I told him about it 4 months ago. And I was like, first we got a record coming out called, and I was like, I kept saying, I don't remember who it's from. I don't remember who the artist is.
He wrote that record?
Teron did. Yeah. She's an A-town
which
girl.
Is so me. Oh, yep. My God.
He wrote that. Yeah. So my point is like, Pancho was so happy. He's like, yo, man. Thank
yeah,
you.
He was.
I'm like, bro, don't pay me back. Thank me by giving Shanti the month of March yeah. with roundups.
Mm.
That's what I be talking about. Like, if I work for somebody, I couldn't offer that. Mm. And by the way, Teron wrote the record, but I can still offer that because Teron is like, whatever you doing, I'm doing.
Right.
And to me, we got the, if we don't, my company is called LYI, which stands for Leverage Your Influence.
Mm.
If we don't leverage our influence for each other, if we don't make phone calls for each other, if we don't stand up for each other, we will always be the community.
And to your point, though, like, who is the Clarence Avon now for, like, our generation of folks, whether we're in music or not? Like, yeah, we need that. And see, I had met Clarence when I was coming up, but I didn't have the benefit of him negotiating for me. You know, I had to go out and figure that shit out on my own, hire some white boy attorneys so I get my money up, you know, with attorneys and getting somebody that's in the rooms with them. But
they never gonna have it's, by the way, they shouldn't have to help you because it's not their problem. It's not a problem. And that's why I say we have to help each other. We have to stand up for each other. We have to speak for each other. We can't shame each other for not being, because I was thinking, we need to bring back the Black Power Fist.
Mm, yeah.
But not for the reasons why y'all think. This is Five Fingers. This is Black people in America. This is who we've always been. And with this, a punch hurts way harder than a slap. And if we get like this and we stand up, like, one thing I got to give, I admire the Jewish community for. They don't motherfucking play. They don't want your money.
Yeah.
They don't want, if you are against them in their mind, you are cut off from, and we don't care if you got 300 million, take it. And to me, we have to take those stances as Black people, as a Black community. And if that means starting the trend, and that's another thing. I think we don't do enough of that. I feel like my problem is that we wait for the trends.
Which
to start.
Is why I started talking about
mental health. I hate that. Like, or we wait for somebody to die. You know what pissed me off about the pandemic? I'm telling you, pissed me off. What really made me write that letter? My nigga, we only talking about this because somebody died on camera.
Mm.
Think about that, Jude. We not talking about this because police killed the Black man for the first time in 15 years and we got to stop this. They've been killing niggas for motherfucking years.
Yeah. Years.
This was the first time they did it on camera in a way where everybody was there.
And everybody was sitting. You didn't have, you had no choice to watch.
And watch this,
Rodney King was on camera.
No. I'm glad you brought that up. It was on camera, but
Not like it was.
But it was on camera at a time. It wasn't about murder. It was on a camera at a time where it wasn't cool to align with Black people.
Yeah.
They felt more confident aligning with the Korean community than they did Black people. If you pay attention to that 92 documentary, they was more lined up with the Koreans than the Black community. Think about that. Why?
And the whole world was on pause, though.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. So when that happens, George Floyd happens. And the reason why, I don't know, I'll tell you the reason why I wrote the letters, because when the George Floyd thing happened, Warner called an emergency. You work for a major company. I don't know how many employees y'all got, but when they need a company-wide call, nigga, they give you a day or two, am I right? Tomorrow at 3 p.m., everybody make their time. They said everybody get on live and get on Zoom in 15 minutes. I thought when our artist died, because I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like 15 minutes on a Zoom? Nigga, I didn't have time to drive home. I never forgot. I was at a Krispy Kreme on fucking Highway 85. Like, the fuck I'm supposed to? A Zoom? And they said everybody show their face. The fuck going on? So I get on the call, and Aaron is like, we know the uproar is happening right now. And I'm like, that's what the fuck this call is about? Fucking George Floyd?
Mm.
So it's like, and he says on the call, he says, I want everybody to be safe. And before we go, are there any Black people, mind you, it's 150 people on the call, on a Zoom, not in the room, it's already hard in the room, but in the Zoom is even harder because now you can see everybody's face on the screen. So you see Shanti going like, oh. So you know, so he's like, anybody want to say something? And nobody said nothing. And I was like, nigga, everybody Black in here, it's a miracle that we're all here. You think we're gonna fuck that up by talking about George Floyd? So that's why I wrote the letter for. Hey, this is why we don't talk. So it wasn't, and it was anonymous, but it wasn't the start shit. It was like, yo, this is why we don't talk. Then it was so powerful, they was like, we need somebody, a face for it. Okay, I'll be the face. I didn't mind if I'm being honest with you, I didn't mind being a face the first time. Shanti, I wrote the letter. If I'm being honest with you, the whole time I wrote the letter, it says y'all. The original time I wrote it said me. I was like, I don't have those problems because I live in Atlanta. Mm. That's what the letter really was. It was really a love letter to Atlanta. Like, hey, look, man, I don't have these issues.
Right.
I can get my mayor on the phone. I can get any superstar on the phone. I can get any manager on the phone. If I don't know about a party, Shanti's still going to make sure me and Jack, like, this is my city. And this city shows you what black unity can really be.
Yeah.
That's what this city is. So for me, it's like, here is one of our architects. Here is a black city. Here is a mission for us. And if we don't all stop for two motherfucking seconds, if this wasn't attached to a nonprofit already, I would have made Silence of Shame the nonprofit for when we play Making a Cut. I don't care. I want to see us be okay, because I know I have kids, and I know one day my kids are going to walk in the room. And if we don't get this shit right, they're going to make my kids feel like what your dad did wasn't shit. And ain't nobody going to do that. So that's why I feel like we got to stand up. Like, I'm going to hit Poncho myself. I'm going to call it myself. We should hit Rugs too. You're a New Yorker, but you should do it. Everybody who owns something, the Gathering Spot, they should give you a chance.
No,
they fuck with you. But I'm saying they should definitely say, would you like to add an extra 50 cents to your membership for black mental health? Nigga, who would say no to that?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. We gotta start using our imaginations. Because all of us have been doing lately has been working to help other people do our imagination. I know they do. I see you support Ryan and TK too. I know they do, but I'm just saying we need more of how can I help? What can we do? Nigga, every fucking event should have a fucking free, as part of the charity of the event, should have a free booth just for nonprofits to sell their shit that they don't pay the $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, if the world was looking, do you think they'll do it? Juju, do you?
Pay to a nonprofit?
No, do the right thing.
Depending on who it is, yeah.
If the world is looking, I think if the world is looking, everybody does the right thing. I think if the world is looking, everybody's like, nah, the world looking. Let me get this shit right. How much you need? 10? I'm hit 20 just because the world looking.
Well, that's what happened with the social justice fund, and all these major corporations put all this money in a pot. And ironically, I have people that work on the inside for some of the big, not music companies, just larger companies. And you think they spent all that money where they were supposed to? No. But when the world is looking, they do it. Yeah. But then there has to be the accountability afterwards to make sure that it
when
gets
George
done.
Floyd got murdered, every label put $100 million up in the fund.
That's
everybody.
My point.
That, right, am I still? So my only thing is, if we don't pay attention now, it's going to wait for somebody else to die on camera and be like, this world is so fucked up. Why are we doing like this? Shanti, do you need help? Man, if you don't get up your ass and help before a fucking catastrophe happens,
right,
nigga, what are we supposed to do? That's what my thing is at. So is there anything... No, I have to ask you something. I'm not going to do Making a Cut because this ain't the conversation for that. But I will do Credit Check. And we have a segment called Credit Check where we give people like yourself a chance to shout out 2 to 3 unsung heroes in your story. Like, don't give them flowers. Let's give them credit. Let's let them take that and say, I told y'all I did something. Who are the people you would give it to?
That's a great... Like in my career or like what I'm doing
now?
In
your story. It could be any part of it.
So Credit Check, one of them would be my good friend. She's a life coach, Sherry Riley.
Shout out to Sherry. I did a TED
Talk to Sherry, who worked with me at LaFace. And she's now a big empowerment coach and does a lot with C-suite and athletes and high achievers. But anyway, it was Sherry who won. Literally, like, this the kind of person she is. When I said I wanted to start doing public speaking to share my story, and I was trying to figure out, you know, what I needed to do, she sent me her one sheet and was like, I don't care, just, you know, use it, just switch it up. People so funny about sharing shit, but like, she didn't even think twice. She gave me, you know, her accountant and, you know, just all the kind of stuff I needed as an entrepreneur. And then she also more importantly, taught me how to pray. And I know that might sound crazy.
No, it's not.
No.
But I've always been spiritual, and I grew up Catholic, and I've changed denominations. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to work on my relationship with God. And I would see her in spaces and places, but I would see that relationship she had with God when she would be praying. I was like, I really want to know how to pray. Like,
right.
I want to be the girl that can say, you know, grace at Thanksgiving with authority and really feel like I know what I'm talking about. And I know part of that comes from studying the word, but also you need somebody to teach you how to even process through all of that. I needed to process through my spirituality. So shout out to Sherry for that. Shout out to my late sister who died almost 5 years ago from a blood clot. That nearly took me out. And it still takes my breath away every time I talk about losing my sister. But it was my sister who said, fuck it, you can quit and walk away.
Mm.
And she was talking about the music business.
I love
that.
She
said, you have sacrificed, you've missed so much. Like, there were times where my sister, like, I would just, you know, I was damn near printing cash for my little space.
Yeah.
I mean, I was hood rich.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Making almost $500,000 a year. I was always sending money, buying the kids this, you know, her kids. But she was like, I need your time.
Yeah.
I don't want your money. I want your time. So I sacrificed a lot of time. And it was her, though, that gave me the courage when I first talked about my suicidal ideation to get help. And then being able to walk away and still hold my head high. Mm. She was like, you don't owe anybody anything. You gave them your all. Now come home and help yourself and get yourself back together. So those are the two people. And then just, you know, my brother and my other family who are just there for me unconditionally. Like, my friends from Southwest Atlanta that I went to Southwest and Maidswood and Peyton Forest, they're unmatched.
Yes.
So credit check to my high school and middle school friends. Like, they are there for me if it's Shanti making $500,000 or if it's Shanti who really almost took their own life. Like, they're there for me through thick and
thin.
That's
your village.
My village in Atlanta, like growing up in Southwest Atlanta is special. I can't even, there's no price tag you could ever put.
I grew up on
it.
The South Side. It was nothing like, yeah,
like it's the best shit ever.
It's free. It.
And so that's why I knew coming back to Atlanta, I was going to be okay. I left New York, left it all on the table. But to your point, we have such a close knit family. We look out, we show up. You know, Atlanta ain't perfect, but we do look out for each other. And I knew that I could come back and survive. And heal, and then thrive in this community.
I agree.
Because it is fucking utopia. It is our own Wakanda.
It is freedom. Yeah.
It is freedom. Absolute freedom.
Okay, I love that. So, Dream, that's the last question.
So, you're on the God Show, which stands for Goats and Underdogs. So, what would you call yourself, a goat or underdog?
Oh, God. You know I don't like talking about myself.
I already know.
You should talk about yourself, though.
Yeah, but
you did
I know.
A lot of amazing things, and they need to know.
I feel like I'm still an underdog because I'm in an unpopular space with mental health and where I am. And so I still feel like I'm trying to.
But just for you to talk about it is a good thing, that you can actually talk about it and get it out there. It's showing that the process.
I appreciate that. But I always, you know, I try to pull for the underdogs for the most part, even in sports and different things. Because I still feel like I'm that little engine that could. So other people have called me a goat. I don't think I'm the greatest of all time in street promotions. I definitely made my mark, you know, in the game. So I would say underdog probably because I'm still climbing.
Well, I'm here to tell you that we don't let people come on a God Show unless they're goated. You are goated. Oh. We don't let anybody sit here unless we feel like they have a story that's truly important.
I appreciate that.
And on Women's Month, we just want to shout out a superhero woman, a shero. We want to shout out our sheroes. And I'm going to tell you a goat because I don't know another marketing person that has a nickname. Nobody else can. You got Shoestring is yours for the rest of your life. So you are a goat.
My favorite marketing moment, one of them, was doing the marketing for Donnell Jones when his album came out. And I told LA, I was like, we need to like really get this out to all the industry. So this is back when people were using CDs. So I made two CDs and I called it one for the car, one for the crib.
Yeah.
And so we made a double CD package. And so you kept one in your car and kept one, you know, in the office or whatever. And it was still one of the most talked about.
Oh, I didn't know. That's
marketing
crazy.
Campaigns. Yeah.
And I think the biggest moment I'm going to give you props for was the moment that put Atlanta on a map was your idea.
The little face cookout.
Thank you. That was the first time Biggie, everybody was here for that. That was the first time Atlanta was like, okay, we're here.
That was 1994.
Yeah.
Yeah, LA was like, we need to do something. Outkast has a gold album. What you going to do? And I just didn't want to do a club party. I literally rented a mansion in Decatur just before people were really doing mansion parties. And we had Biggie, Puff, Outkast, Usher, Goody Mob, Busta Rhymes, like it was nuts.
That's one of my
MTV, BET. Like I just ran into a guy. He was like, "Yo, you know I still have all that footage." Like,
We need to do. You need to do a documentary called the LaFace Cookout. Because to me, I feel like it was a great activation. I was too young.
And Jaha Johnson was my intern.
Yep. And then you bring in Ethiopia too. Or did,
well, she didn't. She was my intern.
She told the story how she met you and you the reason why she got in the music business. She told. I heard that out of her mouth. When she was like, she met you at like an event.
And she was in high school. She was amazing.
She
told me that.
She went. She went.
But Jaha was my intern, and he worked with me on the cookout. And we blew that shit out the water.
That's crazy. That's to me. That was the birth of.
And that was I hadn't even been there like a full year.
Really?
I was a kid.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
I wish I was around. Those are the beautiful days.
Can I give my information to how people?
No, first of all. Let me. You have something for me?
I got some books. Yeah. So that's my first book I put out called The Hip Hop
Back to You. I want you. Okay. Don't put them down. I want you to put them in my hand.
Okay.
There you. Those are your babies. There you go. Don't put them on. These are your babies, and we're gonna find a place on set for these.
Okay. Thank
you. And I want to find a way for us to help and do some stuff with you on your nonprofit.
I would
because
love that.
Superhero work. The best superhero movie of all time is The Avengers, because it's nothing like watching all of them come together and work together.
Well, I love
and to me, I want to create the Atlanta Avengers movement where
that's dope.
We show up, we help each other, we make sure each other's in the room the right way. And I mean, Atlanta's just the greatest city on earth for black people. I don't know about other races, but for black people, when you in a party and the mayor's over there, he's like, "What's up?" He's like, "Hick 'em Usher," and then "Hick 'em this person," and then "Hick 'em this person," and then "Hick 'em Luda and Nelly." And it's just, we all just hanging together. Like, it's so normal for us. Mm. But that's Atlanta. Mm.
Didn't it feel good? That party felt old Atlanta.
The way it felt to me says that there's a need for a resurgence.
It felt so good.
Because these kids out here don't know the value of just a cookout.
Yeah. People asking me to bring ATL Live back too.
You should.
Me and my partner Marlon Nichols.
No, you should. We need that. We
ran for 10 years. It was crazy at Park Tavern.
Yeah, you need that. Only thing I say is to me, it's just, it became, I would find a way to make it a weekly thing.
Yeah.
Where anybody could come because the way Keith and B Cox party is, lets you know that people are thirsty for just good vibes.
Yeah. Their party. It's so dope.
Everybody coming there, everybody having a good time. I ain't never worried. I saw one fight in like 4 or 5 years. I saw one fight, and that shit got broken up in like 20 seconds.
It feels good.
Fight outside, nigga. We don't do that. This R&B music playing. We don't fight at R&B parties, nigga. It's not a rap party. Take this shit outside.
That's right.
But Shanti, I want to thank you for being on the show. Let's give it up for Shanti one more time. If you're watching this, where can I get these books at?
So you can go to my website at www.shantidas.biz. But also, please follow my organization at Silence the Shame on IG. You can follow me on IG at ShantiDas404. And if you want to donate to the organization, you can text the word silence to 707070 or visit our website at silencetheshame.com.
Text 707.
Oh, and please follow the Mebo show. I'm sorry.
Let's go.
My own personal podcast, the Mebo show.
Fuck with Shanti, y'all. She's been on the front line. She done been through everything. And if we don't have people like her in power or of power, they can just keep killing us. Right. Trust me, bro. The easiest way to hurt people is to get the powerful people out the room. And that's what we can't allow. So shout out to Shanti. Shout out to our sponsor. Shout out to Tote and Carry. Shout out to Two Law. Shout out to Yoko Vodka. Shout out to KL Alkaline. And shout out to you for watching this. And shout out to you again for going to her website, purchasing her books, and supporting this black woman. This is The God Show. We are out.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.